You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine. Welcome to Sponsored, brought to you by Powder Magazine. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and I want to thank you for listening to the podcast over the past 34 weeks. While this is our last episode and we're not sure if there's going to be a season two, we have told some amazing stories here, and I hope you've had a chance to listen to all of the athletes that we've had. You've also been able to hear their inappropriate questions over on thepowellmovement.com. And no, moving forward, I will have a new action sports focused podcast every Monday on thepowellmovement.com. This week on Sponsored, we have Rory Silva as our guest. And Rory was at the top of the ski world in the early 2000s. He was on a team with Seth Morrison, Pep Vuhas, Sean Pettit, and was really in a position to take his skiing to the next level and become the standard of what skiing was to be. Rory's career took a different turn. He went from K2 to Ninth Ward, and from there, Rory stayed in his own bubble, and we will let Rory tell his story as it's an interesting one. Can't say the most uplifting, but it is a great story, so let's hear Rory Silva. Rory.
Can you hear me good?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, I'm in a normal town.
Yeah, it sounds a lot better than you did on the side of the road and at the diner.
Fucking, the diner was like in fucking Grants Pass, but fucking all of a sudden we were there and it was 1:30 and I was like, fuck, I'm going to be out here till like 6 or 7.
Well, I will play the clip that we have from earlier. Here is Rory Silva talking to me from the side of the road this morning.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You sound like you are in a submarine.
I'm in my car. I'll pull over right now. I'm so glad. I was taking my time this morning. Like, fuck, there's something I'm supposed to do on Friday. And then 20 minutes ago, I, like, gave up on all thoughts of it. And I was like, I can't fucking remember what the fuck I'm supposed to do on Friday morning.
Rory and I tried to talk earlier at 9 in the morning. Then we tried around lunchtime. And we're doing it now. It's evening. And what was your day like? It sounded like you had a job to go to.
Yeah, it was at least busy all day. I just happened to live in Southern Oregon and nothing to complain about. I fucking got a DUI or fucking whatever in June last year and had to do diversion and fucking, so I had to stay here and so got a place here and then just finished all of that a week ago today. Last Friday I finished it. It's nice to be allowed to leave again and be able to smoke and have a beer.
So you went, what, 4 months without drinking, smoking, or doing anything?
I fucking drank probably 3 or 4 times. Well, I drank like 2 or 3 times in Tahoe and then 1 or 2 times up here.
Do I need to edit this out of the interview?
For what?
I don't know. I don't want you to get in trouble again.
I don't think they check your interviews to see if you said that you had a couple drinks or not. I fucking started it in December.
Uh-huh.
I was supposed to, just after my first drug test, go down, so I thought I had to quit smoking weed when they drug test me, and they didn't fucking drug test me till after like 6 weeks of classes.
Okay.
Then I got screwed where the first day they drug tested me, and I took it, and I failed for weed or whatever, and then the second day I went in there and had to take another drug test. 14 hours later or whatever, and I wasn't smoking or nothing, but since the first day they made me like take it at the end of the day, I just had to drink a bunch of water and whatnot so I could piss quicker. The other one, I just woke up early in the morning and went and took and was like way more dehydrated, they said, but then I had more weed in my system even though I wasn't smoking. So I had to like start the fucking classes 5 weeks after I had started them. And after that, I just did 12 weeks just now of nothing, and so life's back to normal at least.
So that was probably the first break you've taken in the past, what, 12 years?
No, fucking, like 4 years ago or something. I didn't drink for like 8 months or something because I just kept being sick and ended up not drinking for like 8 months then. And then when I go to Europe, it was just this last time I went to Europe. Well, when I was real young and skied, I fucking always smoked, but just recently went there, and everyone that I met over there all has a bunch of weed or whatever, but before I never smoked over there, and now I guess I will smoke, but I'm definitely not smoking as much as I once was, where it's like every day, all the time.
Yep.
And especially just now starting, I'm fucking like a little kid. I get nervous and don't want to go do things. I would smoke the doobie. Like right now, I'm about to smoke one and fucking, I was going to go play cards afterwards. And then I'm sure I'm going to be nervous now about going and playing cards, which isn't something to be worried about at all. But
no, especially with your buddies.
Last Friday, I went to smoke and fucking, there's like maybe two different poker rooms in Grants Pass. And they're pretty good games, but you go play there. But last Friday, I hadn't smoked at all and smoked a doobie and was like, oh, I'll go play cards early. And was too paranoid of like old people being old people to fucking go play cards.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break from doobies as you spark yours up right now because they could hear that. And that is totally fine. But in terms of your health choices, you've made many that aren't the most wise health choices in your life. You're a diabetic. And were you a diabetic your whole life?
Yeah, like type 1. And I think realistically, it's definitely a bitch and everyone hates it. But it's like made it even when I'm drinking or if I happen to be smoking or this or that, I still know to check my blood. And I get really good A1Cs and go to a doctor every month, at least since I've been here in Oregon, like a diabetic specialist one, just because I hadn't done it since I was 12 or 11 or something. I'd like never had talked to a doctor about it. And so I go to them up here and they're like, wow, how do you do this so healthy and well? And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I thought I was doing it horrible, but all you have to do is keep your numbers between one thing and another and drink sugar or take insulin. And it's pretty easy to manage. They tell you about type 2 diabetics all the time. People like not wanting to give themselves shots. And so they drink water and they think walking around the market is exercise, and it makes their blood sugar go down over weeks instead of things because they're scared of giving themselves shots, and no one wants to give themselves shots. But
did you grow up having to do that?
Yeah, and like I didn't get it till seventh grade, and like there was a girl in our fucking school that I thought was fucking weird because she was a diabetic. And then when I fucking woke up in the hospital and they were like, oh, you're a diabetic, you got to give yourself shots now. I was like, oh, now I'm one of those fucking weird fuckers that got to give themselves shots, you know?
Yeah. Well, where'd you grow up? Where's home base for you growing up?
Mammoth, mostly. When I was real little, I was born at UCI, but most of my life was Mammoth, and then lived in June Lake and then moved up to Portland, and then I've been back and forth between Oregon and Washington and California.
When you're a kid, how do you get into skiing? You've got a brother, too, I think, a younger brother.
Mm-hmm.
And are your parents big skiers and they get you into skiing at a young age?
Well, like my parents met when they were both working at ski resorts or like at the bar in Kirkwood, I think. And then had me and then they moved to Mammoth. And my dad's like really, really good at skiing. He also does like all the carving, snowboarding, and can ski, and he's got a lot of friends that are really good.
He's tight with Plake, right?
Yeah, like he always has been around, and Plake's always been known as the cool guy skier, of course, but he's also like, he's Pops' place, and we grew up on this water ski lake that my dad helped build, and then I don't know if Plake got it from my dad or got it from the people who got it from my dad, but somewhere in there, Plake, I know, was out in fucking Benton area and water skiing there a lot. And when we were little, we'd go out to, I don't think it was Lahontan, maybe, fucking that Plake lived on. And he had a bunch of crazy-ass boats and jet skis and a water ramp. And I never fucking hit the water ramp or nothing, but I just remember being real little, maybe like 10 or 11-ish, and both 3 years younger. And I just remember Plake having crazy boats.
And so he was always in your life? He was like a good buddy of your dad's that you'd always see?
I know like when we were around 10 or 11, it was around that time we'd get to go over to like Plake's house and pick out goggles for Christmas presents.
Nice.
I had to have been 12 or something where it was like I knew who Plake was, and maybe he was around before that, but I just don't really remember. I just remember being like a little kid and them being around, but I just don't remember. I remember when I was 12, fucking him talking about doing a backflip or a 360 or something, and me like actually knowing what the fuck he was talking about instead of just being a dumb little kid.
Yeah. And do your parents put you, are you in any race program or anything? Are you guys just going skiing? How does that work out for you when you get into the sport?
When I was really little, we did. In kindergarten in Mammoth, you just go up to the mountain and kind of learn to ski. Or maybe there was Mighty Mites was that time. And it was like Mammoth's junior race program.
Yep.
And then they do like all the J5, J4, J3, J2, J1 shit. And like, I know that after Mighty Mites, I did the J5 shit for 1 year or 2 years. And then did the J4 shit for 1 year. And then didn't do anything for a few years. And then did the freestyle team at Mammoth right when they first started it. Fucking for like 2 years. And we went to US Open and did things like that. And that was the year Mammoth got the Gravity Games or whatever it was. And so they had a contest. They used to have a bunch of contests, but I was little, 12 or 13 maybe.
So you're with the freestyle team, and how do you do in school? I mean, we don't really need to talk about school, but...
I always did fine in school, and then around high school, I started doing independent study, and we just found out we could just fucking do it. I could take off for skiing and then come back, and instead of getting in trouble for missing school, they suggested doing independent study, and I think me and my mom were like, what the fuck? You could just do the school at home. And they gave us the books. And fucking I was like, wait, instead of just doing chapter 1 through 4, what if I do chapter 1 through 78? Is that the whole year? And they're like, well, technically, but... And so we would just, I don't know, we'd smoke doobies and sit there and just... Some nights you'd do 20 chapters of the fucking book and just sit there and turn them in when you came back from ski trips.
When you say we'd smoke doobies... You brought your mom up earlier. Is it like something that you can do in your house and it's no big deal?
Oh, no. I think we were always smoking at all the older kids that skied around town. Mom would drop us off at school. And it wasn't until I think I was 18 by the time when my mom was never for us smoking at all. She, I don't think, yelled at us so much about it, but it was because it got to a point where it wasn't so much like, what the fuck are you going to say? But... I might have smoked with my mom in my life, but I don't even think so. And me smoking cigarettes always, she always hates it. I have to wash my fucking hands whenever I sit to eat dinner with her.
At that point in your alcoholic career, but at that point in your skiing, how does your first sponsor come about? Because I know you've got a couple years in the freestyle team and people are starting to take notice in Mammoth. And how do you end up getting your first free pair of skis?
I think it was like a couple of years before the freestyle team.
What, when you were racing?
No, it was like after racing, and then we got to do a couple things with magazines, and then I rode for either Spider, well, K2, Darby and Matura. No, it was Jeff, Darby and Anderson that worked together, right?
Yep.
And then Goot was like a ski patrol or some shit then. So they... started giving me skis or something. And then Goot ended up taking their job and they passed the number on to someone else. And then the poacher or something was coming out. So they just happened to call me in Mammoth because I kept breaking skis a lot. And I didn't weigh a lot. I wasn't like a fucking skinny kid, but I wasn't huge by any means. But like I broke skis, it seemed like every week.
Did the poacher hold up for you when they sent them to you?
I don't know. I think all the old K2 skis were fucking shit. I loved them to death, but I think so many of them, I was just always skiing on them broken.
I could see you skiing on them broken, though, and I will say you weren't the type of person that would ask for skis, and even if they were a little broken, you'd probably ski them until something just...
No, I was really never good about giving a shit, and still to this day, at home, I'll have 4 skateboards sitting there. And I'll be more likely to give them away. I set up a new one every so often, but it's for absolutely no reason. And if a skateboard is kind of beat up, it kind of works then. And skis was the same thing where like when they were brand new, I'd always think there was something weird. And I used to think I'd have to go skiing every day to be able to go skiing and think your skis had to be skied on.
Yeah.
To be skied on sort of shit. And like when I got older, I found out you can just pick up any pair of skis and go do shit. But like when I was younger, it was even if I had to break the edges off or they weren't in the middle, that was the pair of skis I liked. And I liked the fucking stickers on them. And it seemed to be okay to me.
Okay, so you're hooked up with K2, and I think it's probably the second super park. You're maybe 15 years old, and that's when you really blew people's minds, and you're the kid there. Do you remember what I'm talking about at all?
The first few super parks were just snowboarding, but since they're at Mammoth, and Mammoth has always been great to me, always about everything, and they called me and were like, oh, you like to hit jumps, and it was like when Skeen was kind of hitting jumps. And we just hit them all because we knew all the snowboard guys from hitting the Mammoth jumps. And then everyone was kind of excited about that. And then as all the super parks kind of continued, it was like I always got hooked up and they always were super nice to me. And then I don't even know what happened. I know Skeen kept doing super parks, but then I just kept going to the snowboard ones. And
you went to the snowboard ones from the beginning, right?
But then for a little while, they became skier and snowboarder. But then the skier and snowboarder weren't at the same place. And that was one of the years they were in Mammoth. And then I fucking went to them one time, maybe up in Bend, and maybe one time up at Mount Hood. And then went to them again, I think one or two times at Mammoth. But I never went to another skier super park, like ever since I was little. There was one when I was like 16, too, that was in Mammoth that I did. Everyone was excited just because we hit all the jumps. And
I think that's the one I'm talking about. So at 16 to 18, you might not see it, but in the ski world and the names that you're associated with, you're in the upper echelon of professional skiers. When I look at the team that you were on at that point, there was Seth Morrison, Pat Fuhas, Sean Pettit, Mark Abma, and Rory Silva. I don't think I'm missing anybody, but I could be.
Maybe Turpin, no?
Yeah, Chris Turpin, exactly. So six people on that team. And if you look at those people on paper, some of the best skiers in skiing, period. And if you look back at everybody's body of work, it's crazy what everybody's done. And at that point, you were a budding talent. I brought you on especially because the first few episodes, your name came up a ton. And everybody wanted to know what was going on with Rory because they looked at you as the guy with more talent and potential than anybody. And you just ooze style. You definitely did things your own way. And they thought you were the guy that could go further than anybody if you had the work ethic. But really, that wasn't your focus by any means. And can you speak to that?
Yeah, I guess. I definitely felt like until I was maybe 18 or 19, I just never got a video part with anyone and never anyone asked one. And then did stuff with Dubski.
Which your segment in Dubski was very dark. It was amazing, but as dark as it gets, right?
Yeah, but that was the only ski segment that I ever did, like a real ski segment. So it was maybe either too dark or it was either what it was, but Iberg just made a fucking movie about skiing and it was fun to travel around for the year and do it. And then it was like the next year, all of a sudden, no one wanted me to go travel anywhere. So I stopped at least traveling as much, you know?
Weren't you also in the Guatemalan Persuader?
Maybe. I would assume I was.
Yeah, I think you're in the Guatemalan Persuader as well. But you say you stopped traveling as much, but I look at it as back at that time, there would be photo incentive stacks at K2 where all you had needed to do was send in your ads, and given you were young and it didn't seem like you cared, and I think you come from a pretty good family. I think your dad's a developer, so hopefully that helps out, or at least helped out back then. And you'd never send in your invoices to get paid, and was just Rory being Rory and no one thought much of it. And it didn't seem like you thought much of it back then. And then eventually you made the choice to go to Ninth Ward. How did that whole thing?
I don't know. I think with all the like travel budget stuff, my dad just built houses and my mom just worked like normal jobs and they never had a ton of money. And we would get little bits of money and know how to do, I guess, whatever we could with it. And I just never knew about how easy travel budgets and stuff worked or how all the photo incentive stuff worked. I sent in I don't even know if I ever had sent in a travel budget or a photo incentive thing. And it was just because I just never took the time to learn how to do it. And then all of a sudden with the K2 stuff and switching to Ninth Ward, it was like the same thing after the year of Dubski. I went to Europe and hung out with everyone in Sauce, and then I came back and just no one picked up the phone for like 3 months calling K2. And I just turned to the people to the left of me and Ninth Ward was happened to be sitting on the couch. And that, I just took skis from them and fucking, like, I never even had another ski sponsor really after that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that whole story. I don't think I was ever really your team manager. I was doing skate at that point.
I think I still came up and hung out with you and Schmeez.
Oh, for sure. We hung out.
I don't think I ever had anything to do with K2 when you were, like, maybe at the very end of me leaving there. But it was right when you got up there. But mostly I just knew you from being up there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's how our relationship came about. We were friendly the whole time you were on K2 and we hung out. And then you went to Ninth Ward and I didn't know the story behind that. You just didn't hear back from anybody and you moved on. And what happened with Ninth Ward now? You had pro models and I thought your pro model actually looked great. I believe it was the black and white striped one. It was pretty simple, but looked awesome. But whatever happened with Ninth Ward, did you ever get paid by them or make any money? Or how did that whole situation play out in the long run?
No, it was like I literally told them I would ride for them. And then nothing really happened for like a year and a half of talking to them. And then they made ski. I think they made like 5 or 6 Rory skis.
Yeah.
But I think there was only like maybe the striped one and maybe one other one where I really said anything. Most of them, I just showed up and there was a ski there. And like I thought I would draw and do everything, but it just never fucking happened. And I think they're a company again now, but I have no idea what the fuck they're doing. Or I know like with me and Mick, at least, not a lot ever happened. And so at that time, there were a couple fun things. I think we went to U.S. Open one year. Me and Mikhail did.
Okay.
But I don't really remember doing much with them.
No, but you were on their team, and it seemed like you fit image of you just didn't give a fuck, and that was just how you were rolling. After Ninth Ward, did you have any more sponsors in skiing? Because I'm thinking this is what, like 2008, 2009, or earlier?
Maybe even earlier. It was whenever K2 stopped calling me. I think I had Bolle shit for like 2 or 3 years where they would make me go do contests. But I don't think I had to film anything. And I had to like show up once or twice a year to do a trick on a jump. But mostly not really anything. Everything that I've ever gone skiing is just to see if we wanted to go skiing.
How much do you think the most you ever made in a year being a professional skier was?
Oh, I don't even fucking like, I bet less than 30 grand.
How much is the most you've won in a contest?
I don't know, at least 7 maybe to 10 grand, but usually it would be like a contest year where I'd win like 20 grand that year, but I'd only be getting 2 grand from sponsors, and then fucking like would always just be trading or selling all of our stuff that we got, you know, but it never seemed like not enough money. And one year I went to Japan maybe with like fucking $143 or $143 and was like, what the fuck am I going to do here for 3 weeks? And then got handed like fucking 9 grand the third day I was there, and then got handed fucking something crazy, like fucking 4 or 6 grand.
Just from contests?
Yeah. And like then it happened again when I was 23 or something, where I like went over there randomly for fucking 4 days for these few things and was like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do over there. And made like fucking 28 grand or something and fucking felt like I like hit a jump 4 times.
That's pretty awesome. Well, that keeps you going for sure. With your career, I mean, you might not even look at it as a career. You're just skiing and getting sponsored, but you weren't too involved on the business side of it by any means. There was aspects and trips that you'd go on, but I'm guessing you weren't really focused on it. You're not emailing team managers and saying, hey, get me here, do that.
There wasn't a lot of emailing or things, and we called everyone. Yeah, I just never fucking either had a manager or had anyone, like, I'd tell them that they should call me, and then they would be like, well, he'll call us. And I would just never would call them. And
were your parents involved? Because you really, when I think of it, you started at a really young age from getting free skis. I mean, you were like a 14-year-old prodigy at that point.
I think K2 gave me skis when I was like 11. But my dad was good at skiing. He might have been snowboarding at that time. Who knows? He was always snowmobile. He did everything, like fucking rock climbing, ice climbing bullshit. And he was always gone doing that weird shit. And then Mom skied, but she skis more now, I think. And fucking, I just all of a sudden got good at skiing, and we were in Mammoth, where all of a sudden it was next to Oakley, and all the K2 people were there, and fucking this, that, and the other, and just happened to be right next to everyone. And I think I rode for Smith then, but fucking Strokes and all them would always come up to Mammoth and ski and fucking do fun things. And so it was always people there to ski with, and it just kind of happened, I guess.
So, I mean, it's really been 8 years or 9 years since you've made money from skiing, and probably since K2, since you've really seen like a check from skiing. Actually, you've got those Japan trips. So it's been a while since you've made money from skiing. And what have you been doing since then to make ends meet? Because I know there's been a ton of travel on your plate. We're going to talk about that on Inappropriate Questions. But what do you do for work?
I live in Southern Oregon. And like I said, I just got this stupid fucking DUI. So I had to stay here all year. And they have all this stupid wreck and medical weed shit out here. So I just do that, and it makes life at least as simple as could be.
So I guess you're working in your passion, so it makes it easy?
I wouldn't call weed a passion of anyone's, but I could do fucking diversion and tell them I'm growing weed on the fucking paperwork, and like that was allowed, so I was like, oh, fuck it, I don't give a shit about what I do now.
But you say it's not a passion, but it definitely has been something that's a driving force in your life.
I definitely enjoy it and like growing weed, and it's like sick because literally you work your ass off from like 7 a.m. to 7 or 8 o'clock at night every night, and fucking you do it for 5 or 7 months and you feel like you're so tired you can't move, but you happen to just not be like a fucking jock, but you're in like such good shape that you're like, oh fuck it, and you just can buy a plane ticket to go somewhere. Like I have a car that I drive every day, and then I have a car that broke, and then a truck that we drive for work. I have everything here in a little, like, one-bedroom thing, but I don't have any kids or any fucking problems like that, where as soon as work's done, I can fucking go visit somewhere I want to be instead of sit around for 4 or 5 months while there's nothing to do. And it's not being a professional skier, but I get to go ski and get to go do places and do things. And it's kind of made me a lot more healthy because it is what it is.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. I'm going to talk about one last thing, ski related for sure, is in 2013, you put out some Diabetic edits. You are covered in tattoos. And actually, the picture I'm going to use for the podcast is a picture, I think, of your first tattoo. Maybe you were at my house. You went to the tattoo convention in Seattle, and you look like a little kid with one big tattoo on your shoulder.
Is it like a skull with burning candles?
Yeah, and the teeth are green slime.
Yeah, it's the first tattoo I ever got, I think.
Yeah, so I have three pictures of you that we'll use for this thing from that day. But you had a Diabetic ski edit, and what was the thought process behind that?
Me and B. Paul ran into each other at T's event in South Lake, and then me and B. Paul and Dean Can fucking, for some reason, hung out at Fields Place. And, like, I hadn't skied in 2 years. Maybe a little longer. And fucking then went and hung out with those two guys. And then fucking, I think, Candine and fucking B. Paul got a place in Mammoth. And I just ended up going to Mammoth with them and skiing for, like, fucking 2 weeks. And he made the first little edit thing, and then we thought it would be fun, and we made another one, or maybe two. I don't really remember. No, maybe just one. And then the next year, when I got done working, I just showed up there, and it was just me and B. Paul and maybe Henrik. And fucking, we stayed on, like, Malone and Scotty and them's couch and fucking just ended up skiing every day and getting drunk in Mammoth for like 3 or 4 weeks. And that was like 3 or 4 years ago. And we maybe made one or two of them then. But it all happened just because I was hanging out with B. Paul and he knew how to film and make stuff on his computer when he was fucking bored.
And there's a legend of the Rory that people hear about but they never see because you are a hidden character in the ski world where when you were at your prime, the internet wasn't blown up like it is today, and people weren't putting out content like they are today. So there's not much out there on Rory Silva. So I'm glad that we were able to have you here on the podcast. We'll jump over to Inappropriate Questions in a minute. But Rory, it's been great catching up, and I thank you for coming on.
No worries.
So that was the sponsored podcast. I hope you all have enjoyed the stories that we've told throughout the season. And I guarantee that I will have another Ski Focus podcast for next season. Could start in a couple weeks, could start in the fall. We're really not sure of those details yet. But as they come, I'll fill you in through my social channels. As always, I want to thank you for tuning in to Powder Radio. You can hear more of me on thepowelmovement.com. I have a new show coming out every Monday, so tune into those. On behalf of Powder Magazine, thanks for listening.